episode of Sleep and Relax ASMR, I wanted to take a moment and say thank you for tuning in and listening to the podcast. I also wanted to mention that we just launched our website, which is sleepandrelaxasmr.com, just all spelled out. The website has all of our show episodes, news and announcements, and it also has information for brands that are interested in sponsoring the show. But most importantly, the website will make it easier to connect with you guys, and I would love to get in touch with as many fans as possible. So I invite you guys to check out sleepandrelaxasmr.com. It's all spelled out. If you're confused about the spelling, just check out the show notes, and there will be a direct link. But that's all for now. Thanks again for tuning in, and enjoy the episode. So, before getting into the episode, I need to qualify that I'm feeling a little under the weather. So, if I don't sound quite normal, I hope it's not too bad and not too distracting. But it's only fair that I mention that beforehand. But anyway, let's keep on reading Oliver Twist. I'm pretty sure today will be the finale of Oliver Twist. I only have a couple chapters left to go. Okay. Chapter 19, The End of Bill Sykes. Monks and the Dodger were not the only ones in trouble. Fagin and his ring of thieves were slowly but surely being found. Toby Crackett and another thief nervously discussed matters in Toby's attic hideout one night. "What did the police pick up, Fagin?" asked Toby. "Just at dinner time," said the other thief. Boulder tried to hide in the empty water barrel. He dove in head first, but his legs were so long that they stuck out at the top, so they grabbed him too. "And Charlie Bates?" asked Toby. "He'll be here soon." "This isn't the end of all this," said Toby. "The law will get more of us before it's done." While the two sat trying to think about what to do next, they heard a noise at the door. Bullseye leaped into the room. Toby went to the window, looked down, and saw Sykes coming their way. "I hoped he wouldn't come here, but we've got to let him in," Toby said, picking up the candle. Sykes came in looking like a ghost. His eyes were hollow and his face thin and white. "How long's that dog been here?" he asked. "Was he alone?" "Not long and alone," said Toby. "Tonight's paper says that Fagin's been captured. Is it true or a lie?" asked Sykes. "It's true." They were silent for a minute or two. Then, turning to Toby, Sykes said, "Do you plan to give me up for a reward, or let me hide out here until the police quit their manhunt?" "You may stay here if you think it's safe," said Toby. Sykes sat down across from the door. When Charlie Bates entered, he looked straight at the big man. Charlie's eyes widened in terror. "Charlie," said Sykes, stepping forward. "Don't you know me?" "Don't come near me," answered the boy. "You monster. You murdered Nancy." They looked at each other. Then Sykes' eyes sunk slowly to the floor. Charlie screamed, "I'm not afraid of him. If they come here after him, I'll give him up. Murder. Help. Down with him." Attacked Sykes and knocked him down. The fight didn't last long. All at once, there was a loud knocking at the door and the sound of angry voices outside. "Help!" shrieked Charlie Bates. "He's here!" "In the king's name, open up!" a voice shouted from outside. Soon more voices took up the cry. Some people tried to climb the wall. Sykes grabbed the rope and climbed through a window onto the roof. When the people saw him, a louder cry went up. Sykes looked down and saw hundreds of wild people screaming at him. He saw only one chance to get away. He tied one end of the rope tightly around the chimney, With the other hand, he made a loop. Sykes brought the loop over his head in order to slip it under his... under his armpits and lower himself down. Just then, the murderer, looking behind him, threw his arms above his head and yelled out in terror, "The eyes again," he screamed. His crazy mind snapped as he thought he saw Nancy's dead eyes watching him. Falling back in fear and shock, he slipped and tumbled over the roof's edge. The loop was around his neck. He fell for 35 feet to a sudden jerk, and there he hung, dead, swinging back and forth above the angry crowd. Charlie Bates called to the people below to come and take him away. Bullseye had been hiding, but now he ran back and forth on the edge of the roof, howling. He jumped for the dead man's shoulders. Missing his aim, he fell and died on the ground below his master's swinging feet. Chapter 20. The pieces fall together. 2 days later, Oliver was in a carriage headed to the town where he was born. Mrs. Maley, Rose, Mrs. Bedwin, and Dr. Lausburn were with him. Oh, sorry for that crap. Where was I? Oh, Mr. Brownlow followed in another coach. The others did not see that Mr. Brownlow traveled with a man, a tall, young man who was biting his lips. As they passed the familiar sights, Oliver thought of his little friend from the orphan work farm. "If only I could see little Dick now," he said. "You will see him soon," replied Rose, gently taking his folded hands between her own. "You shall tell him how happy you are, and that you have come back to make him happy too." "Yes, yes," said Oliver, "and we'll take him away from here, where he may grow strong and well, shall we?" They drove straight to a hotel where Mr. Grimwig met them. He was all smiles and kindness and did not offer once to eat his head. Mr. Brownlow did not join them at dinner. When 9 o'clock came, Mr. Brownlow entered the room with a strange man. "Monks!" Oliver cried out and almost fainted from shock. There was the cloaked man with a twisted face. Monks threw a look of hate at the boy and sat down near the door. Mr. Brownlow, who had some papers in his hand, walked to a table near Rose and Oliver. "This is a painful time," he said, "but these statements, which have been signed in London before many gentlemen, must be agreed to here by this man." Brownlow turned to Monks. "Now, sir, was this the boy here born to your father, my dear friend Edwin Leaford, and a lady named Agnes Fleming, whom he was to marry? And did that poor lady die when this boy was born? And finally, is this boy then your half-brother, and is your real name Edward Leaford and not Monks?" Oliver gasped and cried out, "My brother?" Monks stared at Oliver with dark, evil eyes. Turning back to Brownlow, he said, "What you have just said is true." "Good," said Mr. Brownlow. "Now, will you read from your confession and tell us what else is true? And if you don't, you can be sure I will help you." "Listen then," said Monks, and he began reading. "When my father became ill in Italy, he never came out of the coma he was in. My mother and I no longer lived with my father, but we were there when he died. Among his things, we found two papers addressed to Mr. Brownlow. They were to be sent him only after my father's death. One of these was a letter to a Lady Agnes. The other was his legal will." "What was in the letter?" asked Mr. Brownlow. "My father told her how much he loved her, and asked her for forgiveness if he had caused her shame. He said if he had lived, he would have been a good husband to her and a good father to their child that she was carrying. It also spoke of the things he had given to her, a gold locket, which she was to wear next to her heart, and a gold..." "And a gold ring, which would someday be engraved with his last name. together for their child if it should be born alive and grow to be of legal age. But the will went on. It said that if that child were to become a lawbreaker, a criminal, then he would get nothing. My mother burned the letter, cried Monks. It never reached Agnes. My mother kept the will and other proof so she could use it to hurt the Fleming family someday. Mr. Fleming moved away to Wales with his two daughters. He changed his name so his friends back home would never know about Agnes and her baby. The old man had died before the child was born. The shame killed him. Agnes, still pregnant, ran away from home. Monks bit his lips. Mr. Brownlow continued, pointing at Monks. Years after that, this man's mother came to me. She told me that her son, Edward, had left her when he was 18, robbing her of jewels and money. The mother was dying and wished to find her son. They got back together and went on to live in Paris, in France, sorry. My mother died there, said Monks. On her deathbed, she passed on these secrets to me. She believed the child had been born and lived, and would get half my money. I swore to her that I would hunt it down and never let it rest. That child would never get any money from my father. I promised that I would try to have that child dragged to prison. Tell us about the locket and ring, said Brownlow, turning to Monks. I bought them from a man and woman who run a workhouse. They learned of them from an old dying workhouse nurse. The nurse had taken them from Agnes Fleming, who died when she gave birth to this boy here, answered Monks without raising his eyes. There were more surprises in store. Mr. Brownlow called out, Mr. Grimwig, bring in Mr. and Mrs. Bumble. Pointing to Monks, Mr. Brownlow asked Mrs. Bumble, do you know that person? No, she replied. I never saw him in all my life, said Mr. Bumble. You never sold him anything? No, replied Mrs. Bumble. Mr. Grimwig again left the room and returned with two old women, who shook and tottered as they walked. You shut the door the night old Sally died, said one of the women to Mrs. Bumble, but you couldn't shout out the sound. That's right, said the other. We listened to what she told you, and we followed you the next day when you took a piece of paper to the pawn shop. Yes, and we saw the man give you the locket and the gold ring. We were nearby. Would you like to hear more? Brownlow asked Mrs. Bumble. No, Mrs. Bumble snapped. I did sell that man the locket and ring, and now they're in the river where you'll never get them. So what?
Sykes as one of his gang members.
Fagin was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging. A few days before the sentence was carried out, Mr. Brownlow took Oliver to see Fagin in his prison cell. Fagin was still the same wicked, mean person he had always been. In spite of this, and in spite of everything Fagin had done to him, little Oliver said a prayer for him. 3 days later, Fagin walked up the steps of the gallows. A noose was put around his neck. The hangman gave the final order, and justice was done. Chapter 22. How it all turned out. Oliver's new start in life had one sad part. Little Dick had died. He never lived to see a better life, but Oliver never forgot him and how much Little Dick had loved him. The property of Oliver's father was divided equally between his sons Edward and Oliver. Mr. Brownlow adopted Oliver as his son. Edward went back to being monks. He spoiled the second chance Mr. Brownlow had given him. He wasted all of his money and returned to crime. He died in prison. Mr. Noah Claypool went free after ratting on Fagin. He went into business helping the police. Which gave him and Charlie enough money to get along. Charlie Bates, shocked by Sykes' crime, changed his ways. He moved to the country and found work on a farm. The rest of Fagin's gang stayed in trouble with the law, and their lives ended in prison. Mr. and Mrs. Bumble lost their jobs. When their money was gone, they were sent to live in that very same workhouse where they had once been so mean to others. Mrs. Maley's son, Harry, married Rose. They had a happy, loving marriage. Mr. Grimwig never really ate his own head. Mr. Brownlow loved Oliver more each day. He gave him books to study and showed him how to live a good life. Oliver never forgot to give prayers of thanks to the one from whom mercy and goodness comes. The love, hope, and peace that Oliver had searched for had finally come to him. Chapter 23. Treasures. In a town not named, near an old village church, there now stands a white marble gravestone. On it, there's just one word: Agnes. Agnes, a young mother who gave her new baby boy one last kiss before she died. A young mother who gave an old nurse a locket, a gold ring, and one dying wish. The cold treasures are lost forever at the bottom of a river somewhere in England. That doesn't matter. A mother's dying wish for a little boy's life came true. That's the treasure that matters and lasts forever. The end. All right, that is the end of the Oliver Twist series. Classic novel, very short, and I had a really nice time reading it. But I have a couple of other novels kind of lined up already. If you guys have specific novels or books you'd like me to read, I'm always willing to hear you out. For suggestions, just send an email to sleepandrelaxasmr@gmail.com, or you can check us out at sleepandrelaxasmr.com. I apologize if my throat and my voice sounded a little off. Like I said, I was sick. I can kind of pick up on it now, but anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the Oliver Twist series. I hope you guys get back to me with what you want to hear next. That's all for now. As always, thanks for listening, and